Porchlight Family Media,
your source for family-centered content.
PorchlightFamilyMedia.com.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker, but most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hello, I'm JD.
And I am Roy.
And I am Andrew.
Welcome to Audio Theater Central. This is the show that's all about family-friendly audio drama. We like to talk about what we call the top three: Adventures in Odyssey, Lamplighter Theater, and Focus on the Family Radio Theater. And, of course, many other family-friendly audio drama productions. Welcome to episode 60. Today, we are actually going to talk about one of the top three. We're going to talk about Adventures in Odyssey. We're going to review The Ties That Bind. We've also got a newscast coming up with some really cool information that I know you're going to like. Also, we have some feedback from you, the listener, and a little mini review of a new series that we're excited to tell you about. Well, Roy,
let's
do it. You got some work to do here.
Yeah. Heirloom Audio has announced that it will be producing two G.A. Henty dramas in 2015. The first, with Lee in Virginia, is set to release in May 2015. Brinkman Adventure Season 3 is now available for purchase. Phil Lawler announced that Iliad House has finished recording and is now into the post-production phase. We'll keep you updated as we learn more. That's it for the news this time. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
All right. We are excited about the new G.A. Hinties.
Yes.
Man, because if you haven't heard it yet, In Freedom's Cause was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes, be looking for a review. Can't wait to do that one. That's going to be awesome.
Yes. And this new series that I wanted to tell you about is called Witnesses, and it's put together by an independent group, just a fan of audio drama. Her name is Tracy, and she's got some cool people to join her on this project, one of those being Phil Lawler. So she released her first episode, the pilot for the series. It's called A Shepherd's Encounter, and it's basically the story of Christmas told from the perspective of the shepherd, and that's the voice that Phil Lawler plays. So just wanted to give you a quick overview of this series. You might want to check it out. There's a link in the show notes if you want to go look into it. But Phil Lawler plays this shepherd, and it's a little bit different from your typical audio drama series. There is the music and sound effects and, of course, the acting, but it's not like a huge cast because it's dealing with one person's perspective of this Bible story. So don't expect a whole lot of action and adventure. It's primarily this character telling his story, and then a few scenes are dramatized out. So it's a little bit different from your typical audio drama, but it's still very high quality, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So again, link in the show notes if you want to check out that new series called Witnesses, and their tagline is Ordinary People, Extraordinary Experiences. So check that out. Well, guys, we're here to talk about Adventures in Odyssey.
Yeah, it feels like it's been so long since we've gotten to do this. Oh, my goodness.
I know. So let's jump into it. As we said at the top of the show, album 58, The Ties That Bind. Wow. I mean, where do you begin? Crazy album. First of all, the first time that there's been 14 episodes?
I believe so.
In an album?
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to say yes. Now, whether I'm right or not remains to be seen, but hey.
When has that stopped us in the past?
Exactly. That's right.
So the first time ever in Adventures in Odyssey, I'm just going to say it, guys.
That's
I'm
right. Just
say
step
it.
Out there.
just this is go the ahead. First time ever this has happened. 14 single episodes or episodes in this.
14 episodes in continuum.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
So this is crazy. I mean, it's almost like I mean, very similar to the Green Ring Conspiracy in that it's one title for the entire album and it's one story arc that continues through the album. It's almost like it's a radio theater production again, because it's just one long story.
Exactly.
Yes. And if you listen to them via download or any other method, of course, we all know that the story just continues, right? There's no breaks. There's no...
Oh, are you serious?
And we'll talk to you next time on Adventures of Ozzy from Chris. It just goes. It just rolls right into the next one and right into the next one. So it really does feel like a Focus on the Family type show.
Man, I did not know that. The OAC, you have to listen to the...
Yep, you have to listen to
what
it.
What happened last time? Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Because it's kind of like the radio version, right?
Right.
So.
Boo. Sorry. No, but I just skip ahead like a minute on the little slider thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just keep going.
Well, let's find the music.
Yeah.
For those of you who, and I'm sure there's none of you out there that fit this category, but who don't know what we're talking about, Andrew, can you give us a summary?
Oh, sure.
For those of you that live in a cave, right? I'm just teasing. I'm teasing.
Oh, back to the caves.
Teasing. Sorry, Andrew. Go ahead. Please continue. I digress.
Who knew that a comic book convention, a poster, and a pastoral visit could cause so much drama in Odyssey? Wooten's got his hands full with a notorious blogger after announcing the creation of a new comic book idea. And he has to deal with a wayward cousin. Wit refuses to join in a local festival and finds himself in a citywide tug of war between conviction and compromise. And the unexpected return of various relatives and former adversaries triggers complications for Connie, Eugene, and the rest of the Odyssey gang. It's the perfect blend of excitement, comedy, and important life lessons.
As usual, this album was full of interesting surprises, and we know that they were tackling some really important issues, some sensitive issues, and also some very timely issues.
Yes.
Good word, timely, exactly.
But very current.
Yeah,
very current. Absolutely. And I think that they did it in a very, very tasteful and tactful way.
Yep.
Thanks to the extraordinary writing of Mr. Paul McCusker. And an interesting thing was that the sound design... Jonathan Crowe, Nathan Jones, and Christopher Deal did the sound design on different episodes, but you would have never known that it was a different artist.
No, sound the style artist. Was very consistent all throughout.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting that right off the bat, in the very first episode, in the very first few minutes, we're already thrown a curveball with Buck Oliver, Pastor Juan coming into the scene. Well, I mean... Figuratively speaking.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Can I mention something that I did not like just right off the bat?
Okay, I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Okay. So I think we discussed this when we were just talking amongst ourselves as we listened to it being released. At the very beginning, Connie is talking to Mr. Whitaker, and Mr. Whitaker tells her about what we just mentioned, that Pastor Juan is going to be talking to Eugene and Katrina about, you know, Buck. And Connie comes off with some comment about how that's so expected. And, you know, Mr. Whitaker, of course, says, "What do you mean expected?" And she says, "Oh, Wit, everybody knows that Wit's going to, or that Buck is going to come back and be adopted by Eugene and Katrina and this and that, yeah, blah, blah, blah." Which has kind of been the fan discussion ever since Buck left, you know.
Yeah.
I felt like addressing it that directly was... A little crude, I guess. I don't know.
A little tacky.
It was out of place. I felt it was tacky. It was like they forced it in there. Like, here, let's throw him a bone or something.
Exactly. I'm 100% agreement with you. I was going to say that if you hadn't, I was going to say the exact same thing because I thought, you don't have to be that overt.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows that it's just that this is an audio drama, but that kind of broke the fourth wall a little bit because they directly addressed fan comments and wishes in a way that sort of worked, but at the same time it was too direct.
Yeah.
You know, it was even more direct than the whole Mitch thing that they did, which anyway, let's get off of that before we
I have it written down right here. Connie mentioning they are predictable. Cool. I thought that was awesome. So
Connie what?
Yeah. I thought the whole scene was pretty cool.
Oh.
So Well, I liked it.
Mixed reviews from the ATC crew.
I liked it. It was cool.
We still love you, Mr. McCusker.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's right. 99% is still an A+.
I thought that first scene there, in that first scene, Wit coming off as not feeling well was like my first sign of like, okay, this is going somewhere. Yep. You know, I totally, that was totally boom. He couldn't remember stuff. He was forgetting stuff. I'm like, okay, where's this going? He's going to die. I know he is.
He's going to die.
He's going to die in this album. Yeah,
the mortal coil revisited.
Exactly.
But. No kidding.
You know, I didn't even pick up on that until you guys mentioned it to me a few days after that episode. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, that was kind of a sign that something was going to happen. But I mean, he was a little absent-minded, forgetting the ice cream flavors and where they were going or something like that. And I was just like, I didn't even pick up on it.
But it was cool to see this was kind of a theme through the whole album, but the storylines came and went, in some cases very quickly, in other cases very slowly, developed through the whole album. You know, some of the story arcs started in episode 2, episode 3. Some of them started in episode 1 and were wrapped up halfway through. So it was really cool. There were so many threads that were tied up all throughout the episode, and a couple left dangling too, which is always good fodder for, you know, future episodes.
Sure.
Why are you talking about your father that way?
Yes. He eats his fodder. Yes.
I thought Gunnar Sizemore stepping into the role of Matthew Parker did a really, really good job.
Yeah.
There were certain moments where I almost forgot that it wasn't Zach anymore.
Yeah.
I think he did a really phenomenal job. Well, another thing that kind of made this series really timely and current event-like was the references to Comic Connellsville. I mean, that's a big thing in popular culture, Comic-Cons and all of the different conventions around the country for different nerdy pastimes.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I remember right, it was happening here in Arizona. At like the same exact time.
Yeah,
it was.
The Comic Con actually just finished up.
Yeah.
I remember having to drive
around it at work and stuff. And it's just like, my word, this is ridiculous.
It gets crazy around Comic Cons, which is pretty, which they pulled off pretty well.
Oh, so. The scenes and I have written down, you know, just like the sound design, going back to what you're talking about, the sound design, just that whole scene where Penny and Wooten are walking through, just like hearing the backgrounds, you know, that changes like to different things. Mm. And it's just really neat. That whole sound design, I just love that part, the whole with those effects. And Wooten's explaining like these characters are, you know, this is the hammer and you get like this like deep boom, boom of a hammer. And this is the, you know, screwdriver, then the tape measure. And they all have like these like really crazy effects on them, like kind of slowed them down a little bit and stuff. But it was neat. I like the sound design of that part. That was one of my – I think I voted for that scene in the Avery Awards right there.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that was my scene. Yeah.
Another cool thing about the Comic Connellsville was that the MC for the convention was Nathan Hubler.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is kind of cool to hear him on the other side of the microphone there.
Yeah.
For change.
Yeah,
that's really neat.
Of course, Comic Connellsville dropped some maybe expected bomb, I don't know, with Jules showing up. I didn't expect her to show up at the Comic Connellsville, but I think we knew maybe from comments before that she was coming back.
I didn't expect her to show up this soon in an album. I was, you know.
Yeah, like right after 57. Yeah. The very next one she shows back up.
Well, and did it, it had a little bit of a feel, this album had a little bit of a feel to me as a little bit rushed as far as like in the first couple of episodes where like, okay, we're bringing back Buck Oliver. Pastor Juan is getting referenced again. Here comes Jules. You know, there was just a lot of stuff happening right at the get-go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and it's obvious that, you know, we were talking about it as we were listening to it, my wife and I, that, hey, they're packing a ton of stuff in these first two episodes, and we talked about that as well, that, man, it feels kind of rushed, but then we were like, well, they obviously have to do this because they had to cram this into 14 episodes, right? I mean, they couldn't even fit it into 12. They had to extend it to 14, and they probably could have made it 16 easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we were getting down to the last couple, and I'm like, How in the world are they going to tie up everything in one or two episodes?
Same thing. Yeah, exactly.
They did it. Yeah, they did it. But yeah.
And I knew, too, because that last episode was going to be like
just 100 one-minute
scenes, you know? like, that was totally off because like 100 minutes. Whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
20 one-minute scenes, okay?
Yeah, exactly. But, tying up everything, just one thing right after the other, which is great.
Yeah.
Okay, so real quickly, I wanted to mention this because it kind of ties into what I said a minute ago about the different – all the stuff that was going on because some of these characters we haven't heard from in a while, but there was – this was a massive cast for this album.
Yes.
I mean, all of the people – so we mentioned Buck, Pastor Juan, you have Miss Adelaide, you have Jason, you have Harlow Doyle, you have
the typical – you know, the usual suspects of Wick, Connie, Eugene – Penny, Wooten, you know, all the regulars, the kids, then, Matthew, Emily,
the whole Parker family,
Jace Mouse,
Wally Hagler, Detective Polehouse comes back in this one, Dale Jacobs,
Vance King,
yeah.
I mean, it was a massive cast. I'm looking through my notes here to see if I missed anybody, but and of course,
these are all major characters, right? These aren't just like little, you know, two or three line characters. These are like people who have been very instrumental in Odyssey in the past.
Exactly.
You know, which is crazy.
Not to mention any of the new people like like Hadley and D. Grant and all of these other – I mean this was a huge, huge cast.
Yeah. And I know Hadley went back to Alaska at the end of this thing. Spoiler alert. But oh my word. He was instantly – a likable character, just Wooten was, you know, like right off the bat, this guy could be in Odyssey forever and we'd love him. You know, like he's one of those classic characters. So
he kind of out Wooten's Wooten.
Yeah, exactly. It's hilarious.
Instantly likable too, I think partly due to the sound design team. I mean, I think they made his character, you know, because
they had a lot to do with it.
He could do all the, you know, stuff with his mouth and, you know, all the like, oh, but like, you know, all the, you know, what makes his character is all the sound in the background. Yeah,
exactly.
I think,
sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, like Wooten's little.
And then Wooten, of course, Jess Harnell, just being Jess Harnell, would play off of those, sorry, just perfectly going, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And some of the things that he would destroy, too, were hilarious. Like, these really rare collectibles, and Wooten would just be like, yeah, you know, that's why it's a collectible, is because it's flammable or whatever, you know, and he caught it on fire.
I can always get another first edition.
Exactly. It's just hilarious.
They did throw us a few bones as far as, like, the continuing story of what's happening in the town as well. So, like, Jason Whitaker is now running J&J Antiques, which is cool. I mean, they made reference that that was going to happen, but we actually – see him in there quite a bit.
Yes.
And that's a big part of the story.
J&J and J Antiques.
Yeah. He's like, oh, we don't want to put my name on the sign yet. So, which is cool because they also, along with giving us a lot of continuation, they also dropped a lot of hints about possibilities for new directions and new stories. So,
yeah.
That was really cool too.
And one that really stands out is that we learned that Bill Kindel – I mean, there's always these little ties to Bill Kindel over the last few albums.
Good pun.
Bill Kindel works for – thank you.
Yeah. Many ties that bind Bill Kindel to Odyssey.
This is said that he works for a company that is the biggest publisher of comic books.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is really, really getting interesting because we found out previously – that he has some tie into the Odyssey Times before, and
because his company bought it,
yeah.
So
he's the chairman of the board.
Yes, he's Andromeda's chairman. Yeah. Is Bill Kindel? Yes.
Just teasing. Just kidding. We won't get on the speculation or on the
the book of speculation.
The book of speculation. Yeah. Okay. I thought it was really cool. Speaking of jumping back to Harlow, I'm glad they brought him in to this whole thing because he's kind of been in the background here and there. But it was neat that he had some, you know, a lot of lines and had part of the whole zombie thing and all.
Yes. And of course, Harlow is still just as Harlow as he ever has been. Exactly. So it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, one of the characters that we find out about in the second episode, so the first part of the story, is that art collector, Hugo Wells.
And, oh, with the amazing voice.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so we were listening to a lamplighter story because, little background, when we heard him, we thought, oh my word, this guy has an amazing voice. This is incredible. Like, he could be the new Dr. Blackard. Like, he's got such a good, deep voice. And I went on to the AIO wiki to find out who played him, and it just said unknown. I was like, oh man, come on. The one person I want to find out about the most, and it says unknown. We don't know who it is. Well, I was listening to a lamplighter and heard his voice. It wasn't as deep, but I could tell it was his voice. And I listened to the credits and got a name. And then I listened to the credits at the end of The Ties That Bind, and there was a name in there that matched. So I thought, maybe this is it. Maybe this is it. And then just before we recorded this show, we dug in a little bit and took the theory, tested it, and found out that we were right, that the guy who plays this is Fred Tatasciore, and he's been on a ton of radio. I think he's been in radio theater a couple times. He's definitely been in Lamplighter often. He's a huge name as far as voice acting goes, mm-hmm. So it's really cool to see somebody new step in like that, and hopefully they're able to use him in the future because he just has an absolutely incredible voice that could be used for all kinds of different characters. He's really good.
So here we go again. We're going to step out on some thin ice and just say, yes, it was Fred Tatasciore.
Yes, exactly.
We're pretty sure.
Yes, we're like 99% sure. So maybe we got this one before the wiki did. That'd be pretty cool.
But that's one of the first things I thought too, was like, this sounds like Dr. Blackard.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, even the tone of like some of those, like Hugo Wells and like a few of those others, instantly my mind's like, okay, these are the bad guys, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. These are going to be the people that are going to like running this show.
Although he wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Hugo was not a bad guy. Matter of fact, he was a
none of
bad
them
guy.
Really were.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Even
true.
Like the guys are like, well, we're going to have a ghost town and all this stuff. You sure. know, even that all sounds like, so where's this all going? And it was really nothing.
It sounds really menacing, but it ends up being a surprisingly small part of the story, right?
Yeah.
So.
That's true. Yeah, I was thinking it was going to develop into some major mystery plot point, but no, it wasn't.
It was not to be.
Now, here's another one of those things that kind of thought that they were forcing it a little bit too much as to addressing things for the fans. Not quite as overt as the Connie comment, but during that Q&A at the con, Wooten answers the question about some of the characters from one of his comic books. And he says, I thought it would change the character too much if he was in a serious relationship.
And oh, like, I didn't even catch that.
Oh, come that's on. Funny. It's like, that's basically what the producers always said about Connie or Eugene or whoever getting into a relationship, and they never wanted to do it because, and that was the answer that they always gave. And I'm like, that's kind of funny they throw that in there.
I didn't even notice that.
I had the same thing written down.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. It's hilarious.
We were listening to it. My wife's like, hey, that's like a throwback to like Connie and Mitch. That's exactly, I'm like, oh my word, you're right. And so
I think they just need to get over themselves about changing characters. Deal with it, people. Deal with it.
Well, there were a couple of throwbacks to specific episodes too. Also in that scene where he's answering the questions, makes a comment like, oh, there's a point to my stories?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's exactly what they talked about, the Broken Pencil Show.
Yep.
I thought of that too.
Now, here's another little thing that I thought was funny, that they Hadley tells a joke, and it was like, it kind of fell flat, and the sound designers put in crickets.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so out of place. It does that. They don't usually do that kind of thing because it does not fit with. They're inside a convention center or something.
Yeah.
There's no crickets in there.
Yeah. Right.
But they were emphasizing the fact that the joke fell flat, and I both found it entertaining and it rubbed me the wrong way at the same time because it's like it doesn't fit. It's not congruent with what's happening here, but it's funny.
But it was funny.
Exactly. I put that in there as a joke. Now it's going out like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, who knows? Maybe one of the sound designers put that in there as a joke.
Maybe.
And it just ended up going out like that. Hey,
yeah. I don't know. I doubt it.
Hey, you doubt it, but we've seen firsthand that things can slip through the cracks, sure, right? It's hilarious.
I think I just get hung up on the sound design on that first series, or just the whole like Comet Connellsville, like we're Hadley's questioning, they're doing the questionnaire with Wooten, and he's like, you know, tripping all over the mic and like pounding the top of it and stuff. Oh, just, yeah. It is hilarious. I'm like, I can just see this, you know. And at the end, he totally just unplugs the thing or they shut it off. It's just so funny. I just think the sound design for that part was really great.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole Comic Conville scenes were great.
And what was cool is also the guy in line, one of the guys in line to get Wooten's autograph, was played by Brock Eastman.
Oh, cool.
I'm almost 100% sure that was him, but I thought that was kind of cool. Former OA Club producer.
Producer, yeah, exactly.
Of course, as we mentioned, we have Detective Pullhouse back in playing a major role again, which I really like that character. He's very much, I think, a quintessential police officer. He's not cartoonish like some of the other ones we've had on the show before, like Officer O'Ryan or, you know, any of those. I really like that character.
Did you say Pullhouse? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I like his style. I like it.
Yeah, he seems more real.
Yeah.
Real. I mean, he's a little over the top.
Well, just his dryness, too, is really cool, you know.
It's but great. I think the over the top is just like what you just said, Roy. It's just he's a cop with a really dry sense of humor.
And yeah,
that's right. It sounds very real as opposed to Officer Harley.
Yeah.
Or even Officer Burke.
Sure, even Officer Burke. There were times that he played a serious character, but sometimes he was a little goofy.
Yeah.
On occasion, like there'll be something that he says or the way he says something that totally makes me think of Dragnet and Jack Webb's version of Officer Friday, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's a
Joe
good
Friday.
Point.
We've heard Phil Proctor on the official podcast before talking about the character of Detective Pullhouse, and I don't think he ever mentioned that was any kind of an inspiration for the character, but there are just certain things that he says or the way he words something, the tone that he uses sometimes that just kind of makes me think of that.
Yeah, he can be sarcastic just like Jack Webb had a tendency to be, usually with the last thing that he said on Dragnet.
Yeah.
It was some type of dig or, you know, sarcastic comment that was funny.
Well, for example, I mean, he tells, right after the vandalism of Wit's End, he tells Jason and Wit, you know, he's like, I operate by the book. And Jason's like, oh yeah, which book? And he said, any Pulp Fiction I happen to have lying around.
That's fine. I never heard that, you know, obviously I've listened to these stories a couple times, but for some reason that line never registered with me.
But he doesn't use a humorous tone where he,
right.
I mean, like you said, Roy, he very dry, but it's a funny line, but he doesn't deliver it humorously.
Which makes it funnier, I guess.
Yeah. And another callback to a previous episode is, of course, Emily and Matthew, we got to have a quote, Parker.
Jones and Parker Detective Agency, mystery a little bit.
But, you know, Emily says to Matthew, guess who I just saw? And he says, Pockets the Clown and Three Trapeze Artists on a Wire.
Which harkens back to the last album, of course, with the Under the Big Top story.
Yeah.
One of the clowns was Pockets and there were three trapezists. So what's funny about the Jones and Parker Detective Agency story here is that they don't really want to get into this mystery. Then Jace Mouse is having to like drag them into the mystery because they have other things going on, and it's not the usual Emily like kicking Matthew in the behind and making him do stuff, which is great. I really liked it a lot better.
Absolutely.
I was so much happier with the way that Emily and Matthew interacted this time. I was like, this is so much better.
Yeah.
Jay was actually the pushy one this time, which
fits
funny.
Him
it was
perfectly.
Funny. Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, Emily was actually likable in this album.
Yes, yes. What a concept. Go Paul. Go Paul McCusker.
I thought it was kind of cool that Miss Adelaide has a reference to Billy Budd in
Yes. What did she say? It was Herman Melville's aggressive religious views or something like that. It's like, man, this lady. I mean, you know, a lot of us, even on this show, even though there's only three of us, so a lot of us might be the majority, or even all three of us, have an interest in political things and all this, and so we hear all the time about the aggressive liberal ideology that's pushed in public schools. So when you hear it, and obviously I went to a Christian school, Roy went to a Christian school, and so we didn't get a lot of that. I don't know, JD, were you homeschooled or did you?
I was both, homeschool and Christian school.
Oh yeah, see,
I didn't go to a public school till high school.
Yep. So it's just, it grates on me when I hear this kind of stuff from Miss Adelaide, you know, because it just irks me so much that it is indicative of things that genuinely happen in today's public school system. It just drives me nuts.
Well, yeah.
Which is the point, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's pointing out how involved parents need to be and, you know, watch what's going on in the class and all these good lessons. But hearing a teacher describe a classic story like Billy Budd and throwing in adjectives that are kind of used to indoctrinate kids, right? I mean, these are impressionable kids, and she's just saying that he has these aggressive religious views and blah 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 and whatever and whatever. You know, fine. It's fine to discuss it that way, but it just and the actress did such a good job at just being so perky and it's just the way it is, you know, and she's just right.
Well, here's an interesting thing Miss Adelaide has always been very much a two-dimensional character.
Yes.
Just kind of a part of the background.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, here she is thrown into this major controversy, and she's a huge player in this entire story arc.
Yeah.
And you really got to see another side of her character, which, like you said, that actress did an amazing job with it.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, this is one that we also heard on the official podcast, and she discussed that very thing about her character. It had always been just kind of a backdrop, and that this last, of course, The Ties That Bind gave a lot of depth to the character and helped her to feel the role out a little bit better, because there was more to this person than just kind of an always perky drama teacher, you know.
Yeah. And now she's an English teacher suddenly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, English and drama do tend to go together.
True.
But another reason why I liked the reference to Billy Budd was, of course, Focus on the Family,
right.
Dramatized Billy Budd. And, you know, they've been doing that a little bit, like they did the reference to Oliver Twist a while back. So, yeah.
And they haven't done Huckleberry Finn as a drama, but Huckleberry Finn was mentioned in
this. Now, here's something that I thought was interesting, how, of course, we have the whole storyline with the blogger, the Perilous Pin, and it wasn't until much later that they actually mentioned a domain name or a URL for the website.
Right.
And as soon as I heard that, I'm like, I told my wife Kristen, I'm like, I'm gonna go register that domain, and then anybody who hears this episode, they're gonna like, oh, I'm gonna go check that out. And it's gonna redirect to audiotheatercentral.com. And of course, I should have known, but I went, it's already registered, and I look up at the information. Of course, Focus on the Family had already registered the domain.
Oh, that's funny. They really did. That's great.
That's great.
Smart of them to do
that. Yeah, it is.
Because I'll redirect it to our review of this album.
Yeah.
Get a little extra traffic.
Yeah.
That's how my devious brain works.
That's right. And of course, throughout this whole thing, we just talked about the large role that Miss Adelaide is playing. Which I'm not sure why everybody calls her Miss Adelaide when we know she's married. But anyway, Detective Polehouse visits her, and you don't know if she's an evil character or a misguided character at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The inclination, of course, is to think that she's doing all of this because she's just an activist and, you know, agrees wholeheartedly with what the bad guys are doing in this one. And the way she talks to Detective Polhouse, it makes it, it kind of firms that idea up a little bit. Like, oh man, this lady is really just trying to, you know, push her viewpoint onto kids through her classroom all the time, you know. And again, the actress did a very good job at just playing it up like, you know, maybe she was just going to be a really, really one of the bad guys. But we find out, of course, later that she's more of the misguided character. So
yeah. And of course, I mean, what we're referring to is, you know, the whole, we know that the whole premise or focus of this album is God's design for family and marriage. And so Witt has these different analogies that he uses. Of course, at the very beginning, he does the ballpoint pen analogy, which was kind of cool. But then when he does this entire scene where they're all in the train room and he does this whole analogy of the trains and the tracks and every, I mean, I thought that was really, really cool. But in that scene, they have this new engine that he and Matthew had been working on. It's run on some other kind of fuel,
which
I thought was interesting because I thought they were all electric.
Electric,
but anyway, as he puts it on the track, he says, "Now let's see if this thing works." And I'm like, "Oh yes, yeah, I love it."
That's so funny. I didn't even pick that up.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. I'll have to point that out to my wife because I'm sure she didn't notice it either, because we definitely would have mentioned that to each other. It's so awesome that all three of us get to listen to these and bring in our own viewpoints because we each hear different things.
Right.
It's so cool.
Yeah. There was two of Witt's inventions were mentioned in this album. You have the Room of Consequence and the Imagination Station were both mentioned.
Right. Yeah.
But we know that Olivia actually took an adventure or whatever
trip,
you call
I guess,
it, a trip, yeah, in the Room of Consequence, but it never tells us what she experienced.
Yeah.
And she's asked about it later, but she does never say. And I thought, that is really interesting. I mean, I'm sure that this happened in the past where they'll just reference somebody going in. I mean, I know that's happened with the Imagination Station. Oh, yeah, I was in the Imagination Station this afternoon or whatever, and they don't mention the adventure. But usually when it's the Room of Consequence, there you actually go into the room with the character.
Yeah.
Well, so Paul McCusker was on the official podcast, and he mentions that it really is the first time that he can remember that they have referenced something that has such a profound effect on a character, Olivia in this case, and even on the story, because Olivia totally changes her mind about what she was feeling. And don't actually visit the scene itself or what she actually does.
Okay. Well, I may have heard that and just subconsciously didn't remember him saying that. Maybe that's where this came from. But I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it is probably about, you know, it probably is the first time that that's ever happened, at least according to his memory and mine as well. I can't remember that ever happening in the past. He also mentions that they may be turning it into a book series, what she goes through, or a book.
Yeah.
Or apparently he wrote a whole another 12 episode album based on what she went through and like her visit in the Room of Consequence. Because I remember from the podcast way back at the beginning of this whole thing that he mentioned that he had actually written out two separate story directions to go with this whole ties that bind family focus thing. And now we know that the other one is in reference to this Olivia Parker visiting the Room of Consequence thing. But at the time, obviously we didn't know that. So they went one direction, but left the other as an option. And if they're taking votes, I'm going to say, let's dramatize this thing. Don't put it in a book. Please, I'm begging you. Don't put it in a book. No. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So this is all news to me, or I just heard it a long time ago and just forgot because I did not even know this.
I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Really?
It was pretty recent. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fairly recent.
It was. Yeah.
Maybe I completely missed an episode of it or something.
Maybe.
Huh. Well, that's fascinating then.
I thought they were going to take that and I was – literally went through my mind. I was like, oh great, we're gonna have really, my next episode is gonna be the whole trip of the, you know, Room of Consequence. And when that didn't happen, I was like, oh cool, you know, the whole thing continues.
But yeah, of course Witt's end computer system gets hacked again,
of course,
and it's like kind of reminds me of Applesauce
or
Blackguard's Castle era, where
or even Novacom, right?
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it gets hacked there.
My mind always goes back to the classics because that's when I was like
a
kid listening to them.
Very true. Oh, and then we have the very tense and ominous scene between Dee Grant and Dale Jacobs.
Mm.
Dun, 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 dun. Mm-hmm. She plays a hardened, cynical character very well. And Dale, of course, is the same Dale Jacobs we've always known. But
yeah.
She kind of ends the conversation with a little threat. And it just kind of turns up the notch a little bit. It's a very... We kind of see this whole Dee Grant maximized comics thing throughout. This conversation actually ends up being very important, and we don't really notice. I mean, it's a very small scene.
Yeah.
But it ends up being like the real big bad thing that's happening in Odyssey, kind of the whole Novacom. The real conspiracy is this conversation is really the only thing that points to it until the very end. Which is kind of interesting that it's such a small scene, but it ends up being a huge factor in the whole sort of feel that there's something, you know, kind of evil going on in Odyssey.
And again, it's like setting up things for future storylines.
Definitely.
Like, she's like, hey, basically saying, if you don't cooperate,
I'll just take your job.
And I like Odyssey. Hey, I might just become the editor of the Odyssey Times. You know, basically, I mean, we're owned. I mean, because she says that Maximized Comics is owned by the same company that owns the Odyssey Times.
And Bill Kendall owns the Odyssey Times.
Yeah.
Right. And Bill Kendall, of course, works for the company that owns both of these things.
Well, and Bill Kendall
and he works
owns
for a company that,
me my own Maximized Comics then. Because he says that he owns
the largest publisher of comics.
Boom.
Yeah.
Whoa. My mind has exploded.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many ways that they could go with this. It's really awesome. They're setting up for – or maybe they're not. I mean, you know, it's always kind of this way with Odyssey. We heard the chairman of Andromeda say that it's over for now, kind of leaving that open to maybe having him come back at some point. And maybe they still will, but he hasn't yet, and that's been 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? So –
well, they got to do that. They can't just shut it off.
You know? Right, right. Exactly. And it's the whole Blackard thing, right? He would show up, and they finally put an end to the Blackard thing, but he popped up a few times in Odyssey, so
– well, then even after that, the whole virus thing, you know, brought in.
they couldn't let poor Blackard just rest in peace. My goodness.
Rest in pieces.
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
That was kind of morbid. Sorry.
A little harsh, but hey.
Now, one thing that I thought was really cool is, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but of course, Paul's been around for many, 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 many years. He wasn't there at the very beginning of Odyssey, but for a lot of the time. So, and I'm speaking of Paul McCusker, of course. But they name that character who is the head of the Odyssey Business Association. His name is Ben Parley.
Right.
Well, Was that kind of a nod to Parley Bear?
Oh, that's a possibility.
Who, you know, who was the voice of Uncle Joe? And
yeah.
He did a lot of other things too, but
another huge
Chester
actor.
Yeah.
Yep. Good old Chester.
Yeah. When I see that name, I don't see. Yeah, I see Parley Bear. Really, I was kept looking at that name. I'm like,
it is uncommon. It's an uncommon name.
Parley. I kept on seeing Parley Bear. It was pretty funny because I knew that name. You know.
Well, and I think they only mentioned it. Like when Connie first says, hey, Mr. Parley is here.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time, Whit calls him Ben.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting that they just kind of slipped that in there, Parley. Could mean nothing. Could have been coincidental, but. And another throwback to the Green Ring was, and again, may not have been intentional, but I thought it was funny that Buck's out there painting the front of Whit's End, and Jules says, do you think Buck would like something to drink? And Eugene says, a lemonade maybe? And it totally brought me back to that time when he kept trying to get Buck to take a drink out of that lemonade with the straw so he could get some DNA or whatever it was, some DNA. Saliva off of the straw. Yep.
That's funny.
And it just, again, like that may not have even been the intention. Because then after that, there's a reference to him drinking lemonade multiple times.
Yeah.
Right.
The little girls kept wanting to take him glasses of lemonade or whatever. But the way Eugene says that, a lemonade maybe, it just cracked me up. And then Connie mentions Hand Up, which we haven't heard anything about in a long, long time.
True.
So again, like the producers always say, the camera is focusing on one point of Odyssey right now. Exactly. And then that doesn't mean that everything's gone away that we're not looking at currently, but.
Yep. Bernard Walton is still washing windows. We just don't ever see him.
Wow. But wouldn't have Bernard just been like great in the Ties That Bind? I mean, I can see him all over
the story. No man, kidding.
He could just fit right in there with Wooten and everything else, you know?
Yep. Yep. No doubt about that.
But anyway.
But alas and alack.
Way to bring it down, Roy.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, let's just keep the morbid stuff rolling here. So this is, of course, a very large part of the story. When Wit goes to this association meeting and everybody's hammering on Wit, you've got to join this festival. You have to. Even though they're celebrating things that the Bible is very clearly against, you know, this whole idea of family just being any group of people that love each other and, you know, and inclusivity being, you know, just you have to include everybody except for the people that believe like you because you're evil, right? So this inclusiveness that's exclusive and this tolerance that's intolerant of other people's views, which is a very interesting thing, but everybody's kind of pushing Wit to just do it. And he's standing up, you know. My wife said that somebody at her work said was, and forgive us that we're bringing this back up again, but was complaining about the new Wit, all right, you know, and said, you know, Wit just, he doesn't have a spine anymore. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? You know, and you listen to some older Odysseys with Hal Smith, and he can sound very stern.
Yeah.
He can get very intense.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Andre Stoika doesn't really have that quality very much, if ever. But I don't think that there's anything more strong that we've ever seen out of Mr. Whitaker than we've seen in this episode, right? He's being pushed hard to do things that he doesn't agree with. And
he's very resolute.
He's just very resolute. No. Not gonna, you know. Sorry, if you don't like it, I'm sorry, but I'm not gonna get upset at you. And if you get upset at me, I'm sorry, but I'm still not gonna do. You know, it's just that tenacious, stubborn. I know what's right, and I'm not gonna compromise that. And of course, under all this pressure, he finally succumbs to what we talked about earlier, that there's something wrong with him, and he collapses. And so you're like, oh my goodness, this is Jenny Whitaker all over again.
Totally.
Oh,
dude, totally. That scene was just like in my mind. It was a total callback to that Fillmore Reformation.
I didn't even think of that.
Oh, dude, are you serious? When I heard this, I was like, oh my word, this is totally like, you know, deja vu, you know. It was crazy. I could just see it, you know, all over again. Mr. Whitaker?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But
then that we just leave Wit collapsing on the floor and never come back to it again, ever.
Yeah, exactly. The next episode, we don't even see him anymore.
We didn't even hear about it. Like, what's going on with Wit?
Yeah, you know, that's
we
funny.
We jump. The camera shifts again, right, to the kids and everything else. They're going to the ghost town. And
so that's another kind of a thread that was running through the story that they never really tie up. Like, we don't know what happened to Mr. Whitaker. Why did that happen? Because he names later on. He names these different things that the doctor said that it could be, but he makes it sound like she has no idea.
Yeah. And some of it is like really like benign, like extreme fatigue. And then one of them is like a failure of a major organ. And you're like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Okay. It could be either you're about to die or you're just really tired.
Yeah.
Okay. Way to give me a nice range of options there, doc.
Yeah.
But of course, like we said, we kind of leave Mr. Whitaker in these dire straits and don't ever hear from him for the next episode or two.
Yeah.
But Jay finally convinces the detective agency, Matthew and Emily, to find the ghost town. And there are all kinds of hilarious lines in this one because the kids meet up with Harlow Doyle, which is just hilarious. Jay and Harlow are quite a pair.
Oh, man.
It's awesome.
That was a great idea, putting those two together. And they end up in this town. And this part, like, I understand it because, again, it's very timely. You know, very, very popular genre in the world, I guess, or around America of whatever.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, the zombie apocalypse, right? And I was like, what? Zombies on Odyssey? Okay. That was odd to me. Very odd.
Yeah. I agree. It was really, really weird.
Like, I don't even know how to talk about it. It was just weird. It didn't make any sense to me. I feel like it should have been something else, to be honest. I think it was a mistake.
Well, there wasn't even really any need for it. I mean, it didn't make any sense necessarily. I mean, it could have been something completely different. They could have still had, because that wasn't even the focus of the television show that this group was filming.
No,
it was all about an odd family,
right,
and how they reacted to some odd situation, which was the zombie thing. So it's right. it wasn't a necessary component.
Yeah, it could have been. The odd family was the focus, not the zombies. And so it could have been anything, which is, I mean, I don't know. It just, maybe they've always done stuff like this. I mean, they have always parodied sort of popular shows and things like that.
But that's true.
This one seems a little odd because of the sort of inherent darkness and sort of violence that usually goes along with those types of things. It's just really weird to me. But anyway. I see here in JD's notes that he passed around, he says, the TV show sounds pretty messed up. That's very true, yes.
Yeah. And continuing in the thread of things that are messed up, then Wooten's house gets set on fire.
That was a super surprise. Oh, my goodness.
That one was. If there was anything that actually shocked me in the whole thing, it was this one.
Yeah.
I remember we were listening to it. It was really late at night, whatever. And we got to that point, and you know, the firefighter says, your house is gutted. Everything is lost. And I told Rebecca, I said, oh, wow, yeah, it's a good thing that he put all of his artwork in Wits End, isn't it?
I totally missed that. I was like freaking out. What happened? I had totally forgotten that.
Because at the very beginning of the story, he had put all of his artwork for his new series in Wits End.
They throw that in there right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like they always do, right? All the important stuff is always in the very beginning. And then like you forget about it for hours and hours and hours, and that's that's right.
And so this is where we kind of a little bit reach a breaking point to where we've kind of turned a corner in the story from new plots developing to everything is starting to hit that, okay, we're getting things wrapped up.
It's a little tipping bit point right now. There, we're going downhill now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So at the very end of this episode, of course, Wooten says, we're going to find the perilous pin, and he's on the internet, and who has the ability to do all this? I think the quote is, who's the most qualified person to break through those codes and stuff? Hadley goes, the FBI? And Wooten says, no, Eugene Meltzner. And so we can see that we're about to go into figure out what's going on mode in Odyssey. So this is where things kind of start wrapping up. The only new thing that's really introduced after this is Miss Adelaide's brother is visited by Wit in the hospital for the first time.
Yeah. And that every one of those scenes with that character of Randall, those were just very, very good, very well done. Mm-hmm. And again, talking about how they're addressing some very sensitive types of issues, and they do it in a really tasteful way, and you know, it's just done really well.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I love Scrabble. That's one of my favorite games. And that mention of, you know, he asks, is there anything I can do for you? Mr. Whitaker asks him, Randall, that. And it's like, you expect him, you know, can you go do this for me? Can you, you know, give this message. So, you know, you think of these big things, and he just wants somebody to spend time with him.
Yeah.
Play Scrabble with him, you know? And it's just like, oh.
And I love the fact that he used to be in Wits
Sunday school
class.
Yes.
That's awesome. I love those connections like that. And again, like I said, this is where we start wrapping things up. So we don't spend a whole lot of time in any one place. So we have this scene with Wit, and things start to accelerate from this point. So now we find out, of course, that the perilous pin does not exist. And oh, everybody freaks out.
That instead of it being just one person, it's a group of people under the same pin name or whatever.
Uh-huh.
The same perilous pin name. So, of course, now Eugene is working on this problem and solving it. And Hadley is in the computer room with Eugene and Wooten and Penny. And I love the fact that Hadley is in the computer room, and I kept waiting for him to push something or do something and just blow up Wit's End, basically. Yeah. Of course, that doesn't happen, but it was just, there were so many funny scenes with Hadley. He's such an awesome character. At one point, Eugene says to Hadley, "You're very literal-minded, aren't you?" And in kind of a slow, thoughtful voice, he goes, "I've always thought of myself as a conservative."
Yeah. Love that.
Which is so funny. And it's just very indicative of Hadley's, this crazy character. And now, of course, Wit is finally out of the hospital after being in there for like, he just shows up at
just
Wit's
Just shows end. Up at Wit's End, yeah. Like, and like, what are you doing here?
Feels like one day he's on death's door, and then the next day he's like, oh, I'm back. Which is why we keep talking, we keep mentioning this, and we probably will do it again, but things are moving so fast at this point, even at this point, that you got to be listening to only this, or you're going to get lost, like, if you're distracted at all.
Yeah.
Because the scenes are short, to the point, they're covering a lot of ground, so things are rapidly wrapping up.
And throughout this whole series, I mean, we're down to the last couple of episodes, but there were several moments where there were some really good conversations which explore some of these thoughts and themes that are that this album was trying to address. And in this part, there was one in particular conversation between Wooten, Wit, Eugene, and Connie just about earthly possessions. And, you know, it's okay to still have affection for mementos or things that mean something to you personally, but not, you know, storing up treasures in this earth, you know. And I just thought that was really good because I've seen over the last – since the reboot, I've seen in the comment sections of – around the Odyssey community, some people are just like, yeah, there hasn't been that many real good lessons in the episodes, which I disagree with. But I think there's been several moments where there's been teachable things, you know, going on. But – and I thought, well, this is it's a perfect example of that. And I thought it was really well done. And then also in that same episode, David Parker's having a conversation with his kids. I forget which one it was in particular, but he says this line that we're just like, that is so good. He said, "Love is something we do, whether the feelings are there or not," talking about a relationship between a husband and wife. And it's just like, that's absolutely true. You know, it's not always happy-go-lucky, you know, everything's fine. But it's a choice. I think he always also makes that statement. It's a choice that we make.
Yeah, exactly.
Really good.
Yeah, it's amazing that even though we're, like, again, we're accelerating through wrapping up all these things, that they take the time to pause and have these types of conversations and lessons and things like that that go on.
There were several of these episodes where the end of the episode just leaves you completely hanging. And
right, because basically you can tell that they just ran out of time and couldn't stuff another scene in there.
And it was the end of part 12. It's like this big reveal. Maximize Comics address matches this and that. And it's like, Dee Grant, she's the Perilous Pin. Even though before they said there wasn't a Perilous Pin. And now, and then the very first opening scenes of the next episode is like, oh, well, maybe she isn't, you know. It's like...
yeah, very true.
I'm looking at my notes and it just making me laugh again thinking of that scene. Just, again, Hadley, just great, great character in this whole thing. He makes a comment about going back to Alaska. I'm just, you know, I'm not needed here, blah, blah, blah. And he says to Wooten, "In the stage play of life, I'm the guy who keeps getting in the way." And Wooten says, "Well, maybe you're the comic relief."
Yeah, exactly.
And that is another kind of thing where it's like breaking the fourth wall kind of thing. It's just like it's stating the obvious, letting the listeners know, hey, this character's whole purpose right here is just been stated, you know. But he takes that as a compliment, which I thought was funny too.
He's exactly. Oh,
coming from you, Wooten, that makes me feel good or something. Yeah.
And he's all like serious and like teared up about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which of course kind of points out what Wooten is there for a lot of times too.
Yeah.
He's the comic relief in a lot of episodes himself.
So I think it was maybe Paul had to do this. Obviously, we find out that Hadley actually plays a much bigger part than we think.
Right.
But Wooten is not going to be in the mood to be all happy and his normal self because of all this stuff that's happening to him.
Right.
The Perilous Pin stealing his artwork and all of this kind of stuff. And, of course, his house being destroyed. So he can't fill that role of comic relief necessarily. So
he laughs very little.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. In these, you know, you don't hear his, like,
yeah,
in, like, any episode until kind of towards the end, right? I mean, he's pretty somber for Wooten, yeah. You know? Yeah.
So Hadley fills that role and does a pretty good job. Another thing that I thought was interesting, because we have all of these different characters, like we talked about, that are making an appearance in this show. And then Penny starts – they're running through these different options of who could be doing this, what's going on here in Odyssey. And she starts throwing out these names of who could be responsible. And she's like, Richard Maxwell, Mr. Charles, and names a couple other people. And I'm like, wait a minute. You weren't even around for any of this. So true, yeah. Obviously she's been living with Connie. So Connie's probably told her all this stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, because even Wooten wasn't around for Richard Maxwell. So
right, yeah.
He couldn't have told her.
It reminds me of another one of those like throwback to the fans thing. Because like, you know, the... You know, bloggers and stuff.
Right? Yeah.
Well, fans our age, right, are the ones that go, oh, man, these guys, they're just, you know. So, again, it's kind of cool to see them throw in stuff like that from time to time when it's not really obvious. Kind of gratuitous, right? Like, oh, I just put this in here. But it's pretty cool.
Along the same time, Detective Polehouse has to deputize Eugene. And so
that's a good
one. And so there's a line about what does Eugene say it? He had to feed he made me eat
No, he says I'm gonna have to deputize you, right. And he's like, yeah. Well, what does that entail? Right. And he tells him
two jelly filled donuts and a cup of coffee.
Yeah. And so then Eugene is relating it to Mr. Whitaker, right? And he's like, He said
I can give you this information to take to the association meeting, he said, but I have to deputize you. And he's like,
yeah.
Or no, he said, but it will involve
jelly-filled
donuts and coffee. And Wood's like, oh, he has to deputize me?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. That's what it is. I'll be able to give you this information, but it'll But first you have to have the jelly donuts and coffee. And then Wit says, oh, you have to deputize me. It kind of switches it up a little bit.
So it's like Wit already gets the joke without even being told. So I thought that was funny.
And major plot point at the end of this episode, of course, is that we find out that Jules is the one who's been snapping pictures of Wooten's artwork and all this because, again, it ties back to that thing that they mentioned at the very beginning. They had stored Wooten's artwork at Wit's End, so she had access to it. She was doing the pictures. She was uploading the pictures to the Perilous Pen, blah, blah, blah. And this is another one where, you know, part 13 is where things are basically wrapped up, you know? It's just...
all the loose ends.
Part 14 is a lot of tying up just complete total resolution to these problems.
Yeah.
Like, we know now who the informant is. Now we're going to find out what happens to her because of it. We're going to find out what happens to Vance because of his involvement. We're going to find out what happens to Buck. We're going to find out what happens to Wit and Randall and Miss Adelaide. All of this stuff we're just going to find out in these, like Roy said, these little like 2 minute, 1 minute, 2 minute scenes.
We're going to bind it all up.
Exactly. All these ties. That's right. We're going to bind everything together.
Yeah.
But it opens up at the beginning where back at the beginning, when Jules first shows up and Connie runs into her, she said, how did you make these connections with people? And she said, oh, through a social networking site. And I think she called it
Face Space.
Yeah, hilarious.
Yeah, I thought
Facebook
that
Facebook and MySpace.
Yeah. Okay. So that cracked me up. Well, then here in part 14, Connie's trying to recall what it was, and she calls it Twit Face. I laughed out loud when she said that.
That really was hilarious. That was great. I guess the one exception to things only being wrapped up at this point is that Hadley does steal Wooten's artwork at this point.
Yeah.
So this is almost like a new development, right? Now we find out that Hadley's kind of been trying to get Wooten's artwork all along. So he steals it and tries to sell it to Mr. Wells. And we, of course, expect that, you know, he's going to go to Mr. Wells and Mr. Wells is going to be like, thank you so much. Yeah. You know, like, oh, you did your job well or something like that. But he's like, no. you stole this, didn't you? And he totally just
hammers
Hadley. Yeah. He does. He gets him bad.
And he totally spills it all.
Yeah.
I did not expect that either. He's like, oh, I'm ruined. You know, yeah, exactly. I need you to give me a lot of money.
Bad debts, bad decisions. You know, it's so funny. And Wooten, of course, in classic Wooten fashion, not only does he forgive Hadley, but he tells him, well, look, let's go up to Mr. Wells. What if I went up there with you and we sold it? He's willing to sell his artwork, even though Hadley just stole it from him. Of course, this is the lesson of family ties being so strong and the love you should have for your family and all of this.
The whole redemption thing, too.
Yeah.
From Buck and all that. So.
Exactly.
Well, and of course, this last episode, Randall passes away, which is a interesting scene there between Wit and Miss Adelaide.
Very.
Which, again, it was done really well. And I'm actually now kind of looking forward to hearing more from this character of Miss Adelaide.
Yeah, exactly. Because we had this whole thing where she gave bad grades to Matthew and Emily because they didn't just repeat back to her what she wanted to hear about how gender doesn't matter and marriage doesn't matter and marriage can be between anybody and blah, blah, blah. Because they didn't do that, she gave them a lower grade. And of course, we had that great, great scene that we kind of missed talking about a little bit where the Parker parents talk to Miss Adelaide and do an amazing job of what parents should do in these kinds of situations. I was really impressed. Yeah. I was like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
But that's when we kind of find out that Miss Adelaide isn't really an evil, you know, subversive kind of vigilantor type person. She's more of just, she has these really strongly held beliefs, misguided though they may be, and she's somehow let them affect her in ways that she didn't even realize.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows the strength of the activism over the activist, you know, like their cause becomes so important that it's everything to them. And it's their kind of religion, whether they know it or not, you know? So again, the communication between Miss Adelaide and Wit at this point is totally different than it was at the beginning because she's come to realize this about herself. She still believes what she believes, but now she understands that, whoa, she let it take over too much of her life and all of that. So it's pretty impressive the way that Wit handles it. Again, being very forgiving and, you know, all of the things that you should do.
You know what it reminds me of? It kind of takes me back to the whole Novacom thing with Monica Stone and her brother and Jason.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same thing almost.
It is very similar.
Yeah.
You're right.
And then the entire 14 parts ends with like the biggest cliffhanger we've had in Odyssey in a long, long time.
No doubt about that.
Maybe the biggest cliffhanger ever.
That was totally
in the history of the series.
Whoa. And maybe one of the biggest surprises.
The biggest surprises. That like, was not expected.
You have this scene, you know, it's Wooten and Penny in the car. They're talking. And I started thinking, I was like, no, they're not really going to do this, are they? They're really going to do this. And then Wooten really does. He proposes. And I'm like, oh, they did it. Whoa.
Yeah. But we don't even hear if she says yes or not, you know.
She just goes, what?
Yeah. Just leaves it hanging. And you know the first episode of the next album is not even going to address it.
Well, it might. We don't
well, we heard from sure. Paul that we're going to be learning more about her family. And
the answer – he does say in the podcast I've mentioned before on this episode that that we won't find out. They are going to draw it out a little bit.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
like when Katrina proposes to Eugene, right?
Yeah.
They can't just have it be yes and oh, it's over. You know, it has to be kind of drawn out. You want to keep people interested. You want to continue, you know. So my guess is that we will know by the end maybe of the next album, but maybe probably not by the beginning. So we'll see.
Sure. But then again, maybe not because the next album is only 6 episodes.
Uh-huh.
But the next album is called Taking the Plunge.
And it comes out in May?
In May, yes. But it's called Taking the Plunge, which is almost synonymous with people
jumping into a relationship.
Yeah, or getting married, right?
Or unclogging a toilet or something. I don't know.
Taking the Plunge.
Well, as always, I mean, it's an Odyssey story. It's Adventures in Odyssey. It's focused on the family. Everything top quality, top notch. Final thoughts on this thing is that it was amazing. It was really amazing. Loved hearing from a lot of characters we haven't heard from in a while, like Dale and Harlow and that kind of thing. Hearing from some of the relatively new characters, Pole House and some of those, Jay and Wally Hagler. I really do like the character of Wally Hagler. So I love hearing more from him. And so this album was just a lot of fun. But I do kind of hope that they get back to the single episode one-off stories, because I don't know. I really, really do like those where you can just pop one in and listen for 30 minutes. You know what I mean? Exactly. You can't do that with this album, obviously.
Right, exactly. Overall, I liked it as well. I think they did an amazing job dealing with, like we talked about before, just some important issues in our culture. And just some interesting things I thought of too is like the first four episodes or five all took place in one day. And I don't think we ever seen that before. I don't know if we have, but which is really interesting. It's all on Sunday. And they really brought the importance of how what a Sunday should be, you know, about family and about God. And like again, going back to that Sunday morning, the whole Sunday morning scramble thing, you know, I thought that was great. You know, Mr. Parker saying, oh, why does this happen every Sunday? We're all, you know, I was like, you know, everybody knows this is the truth. You know, everybody has these kind of Sundays. I really liked that and enjoyed that. And overall, the whole story arcs and plots.
Yes, arcs, because it is multiple arcs. Yeah. It's not just one.
But I really enjoyed it and was extremely satisfied with it.
The only thing I would have liked a little better is if it would have been literally a 16-parter, honestly. the last episode was wrapped up very quickly, and they did it well, but it feels like it was rushed, right? I mean, we've talked about that a little bit before, but other than that, everything is on above average, even for Odyssey. Great storyline. The fact that they even dealt with these issues is very interesting in and of itself, and they did it very tactfully, so I appreciated that. It was good, but they didn't mince words.
Sure.
You know, the position was very well known, which is good. I like that.
Well, if you want to hear more of the behind the scenes of what Paul was thinking as he was writing this album, maybe listen to the podcast that you guys mentioned, because I don't think I've heard that one. But also, the Wits End podcast did an extended interview with him. I think it was, it was maybe about an hour long. And he shared a lot of what he was trying to accomplish with this album, the different examples of a family. And, you know, not every family is perfect. God's design for marriage is, or for family is what it is. But we're flawed humans. And sometimes things happen where it's not the ideal perfect situation. And so he said he tried to show those differences with bringing Buck into a family with Eugene and Katrina and all of this kind of thing. So there's a link in the show notes if you want to go check that out. He shared, I mean, he really, really did go in deep into what his thinking was and what he was trying to accomplish. And it was very, very informative. So you probably want to check that out.
So what do you think of the show?
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys, this is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got to email this.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
Time for some feedback from you, the listener.
Oh, yeah. So, we got a text message on our text message line, and it was a question from Richard saying, do you plan to interview Pat Roy when you review the new JP album? If so, I'd like it if you'd allow your loyal fans to contribute some questions.
Great question there, Richard. And in case you don't know, JP is Jonathan Park. The newest one at this time would be Volume 10. And we plan on taking a look at that very soon in an upcoming episode. And the answer is yes. I have actually already talked with Pat Roy, and he has agreed to come chat with us again about what they're up to. So if you, Richard, or you, anyone else, have question about Jonathan Park in general or Volume 10, get them into us, and we'll see if we can't work them into that conversation.
So we also got a comment on the blog. That says, from Victoria, that says, "Hi guys, so glad you found the Jonathan Parks. They were actually the first audio drama I ever heard." Well, the opposite of you all. Yeah, exactly. That's very true. "I enjoy your podcast. I enjoy all of the info. Would love for you to review more Jonathan Parks. I actually really listen to them for the science info. It is a passion of mine. I have found it a really nice tool to use as a supplement to homeschool science. I'm a bit of a nerd and I take notes. Again, I really appreciate the podcast. I listen to them while I'm working on the computer. Keep up the good work. I started listening at the beginning because we just found you guys. I have only gotten to episode 18. God bless, Victoria." Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
Collecting new fans all the time.
Yeah, thanks, Victoria.
Love it. So, yes, we will be reviewing more Jonathan Park, as we just referenced in Richard's comment. We plan to address every new Jonathan Park as they come out. We're really enjoying the series as well. So I think it's a staple of Audio Theater Central now.
That's right.
And the last bit of feedback we have is from an anonymous person. We don't really know who this is. And can I just say this? Don't mean to call you out here, but we would really, really like it if you would use a name so we know what to call you whenever you leave feedback.
Sure.
But they posted a comment on our last episode, which was our first audio drama to be released to the world, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But they said, "I didn't come across this gym till the day after Christmas. We listened to it over breakfast. It was the most quiet breakfast we ever had. Thank you for this wonderful production." So thank you very much for that great feedback. We appreciate that very much. And if you haven't heard that episode yet, go back to listen to episode 59. It was our production of an audio drama called Babe of the Worlds, which is a Christmas story. So that was a lot of fun. We had a great time putting that together. It was a lot of hard work, but we hope you enjoyed it. And from the feedback that we've gotten, it seems like everybody really liked it. So we've got some other stuff planned for the future, and 2015, guys, is going to be – there's going to be a lot of stuff happening for Audio Theater Central this year. And we want to thank you very much for sticking with us. Don't forget to join the ATC Insiders. We send out messages every once in a while to let you know about what's going on in the audio drama world and what's going on with us here at ATC. There's a button on the website. Join the ATC Insiders. It's free. Click that and get involved. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by going to audiotheatercentral.com/contact or go to the website and click the button.
That's right. That's an easy one.
Be sure to let us know what you think of the show. And again, thank you very much for taking time to listen to this long episode as we dive into Adventures in Odyssey. We will see you next time. Thanks for listening. Audio Theater Central is a production of Porchlight Family Media at porchlightfamilymedia.com.
So this joke is stolen, so I'm taking it from Ali Moot. Thank you, ma'am, for this joke. And it goes like this. What is the difference between a piano, a tuna, and let's just say a podcast about glue?
What?
I'm changing it to fit our podcast here.
There's a lot of differences.
So what's the difference between a piano, a tuna, and a podcast about glue?
Where should I start?
Okay. So here we go. You can tune a piano, but you can't piano a tuna.
You can't what? What's the last one? You can't piano a tuna.
You can tuna a piano, but you can't piano a tuna.
You can tuna a piano, yes. Where does the podcast come from?
I knew you'd get stuck there.
Oh my goodness.
There you go.
Oh my word.